Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Look, we're all here. Jason got a reprieve from his other project for the day, or at least a couple of hours, so he's able to join us. And so it's good to have the full group here. Welcoming Jason back, Jason Eisengrein, retired OIG executive from the Office of Investigations, went on to be the Western UPIC director and is now one of our subject matter experts here at Advise. Matt Kachansky, Jason's counterpart, also retired executive from Office of Investigations and the Northeast UPIC director, and now one of our SIU managers, and Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from Office of Investigations and now a member of our investigative team. And I did have to look at my license and see that I am still Eric Rubenstein, and I am still the senior director for waste and abuse here. So we want to, we were talking before we started this recording, we want to go back, talk a little bit more about some of these SIU improvement things. And we want to circle back a little bit to this intersection on this ongoing lawsuit, this private lawsuit that's going on in state court, in which two defendants who were acquitted of a very large healthcare fraud scheme are now suing some of the commercial plans that are out there. And, you know, we're tracking that, we're following it, and there are some, you know, minor developments. The main defendant in this case is Florida Blue, and they've made a motion to move this case to federal court, claiming that because they administer FEHB or federal employee health benefits, that this should be in federal court and it should not be in state court. And so that's really the biggest development that's out there. But, you know, I want to talk about just, you know, generally speaking, when you read through this complaint, and we've taken another look at it, and we have no reason to believe that any of the information that's in this complaint is not factually correct. The law firms are very reputable firms. And so we're going to go into the operating premise that the facts that are stated in this complaint are borne out to be accurate. But, you know, one of the things that we, you know, that we noticed, and Matt noticed it and brought it up, and is this issue involving a prepay and how one of the commercial payers had the provider on a prepay, Matt. So let's just jump right into this, because this is really an interesting story, right? So, you know, one of the things that they talked about is the fact that one of the commercial payers had put the provider on a prepay review.
Right. Yeah, they did. And according to the complaint, all of the claims that went through the prepay review were all approved and paid, and that the amount of money that was paid during the prepay surpassed even what was, you know, paid before that. So I'm mystified as to why they would continue to go forward with the case if they had internal evidence that these claims were justified and supported. And it just, I just don't understand that.
Right. And you know, and we all know this, right? In the commercial space, they do prepays similarly to what is done on the Medicare side, right? So UPICs are handling prepays, and the SIUs are handling prepays, and it's not in a dissimilar fashion, right? You want to get paid for a service, you submit your documentation to support that service. And so it appears that, and this is prior to the indictment and the trial, like this is all part of the, you know, the preliminary investigation where, you know, this was identified. And to just remind everybody, this gets back to where in the complaint, it had come out that one of the commercial payers provided a witness who provided testimony talking about the 141/22 issue is rare, right? And for those who are keeping up on this, 22 is the place of service, and that is outpatient clinic, facility clinic, and 141 is type of bill, which is on the UB04 versus 22 is on the CMS 1500. And so, you know, the two shall never cross. It's two different claims, two different types of submission of claims. And in fact, they get paid in two different manners. UB04s are paid in the Medicare space, at least, are paid through the Part A, right? It's a UB04, so it's done by the facility, and place of service with 22 would go on a CMS 1500. So you're talking about two different things. And the fact that that was brought out, that there was a prepay that was done and that they had passed the prepay and actually got paid as a result of that, to me, that's an investigative misstep, right? Like, hey, these guys passed it. And then, so wait, I want to go to you because, you know, when we first got to this, you know, you looked at what these codes were, place of service 22, type of bill 141. You know, within the first 30 seconds of you reading the complaint, you opened up the internet, you did a little quick research and said, well, I don't know what 141 is, but it clearly looks different than 22. And what are these? But, you know, it kind of gets to the next step, which is that when you're doing these reviews and you're vetting this complaint, it's, you know, what are the basic steps that you're going to do investigatively to say, hey, is this allegation founded or not? I mean, in what world can you think of where you get a complaint across your desk on a topic that you're not familiar with? In what world do you not open up something and start doing some basic research? I mean, investigators are investigators, which means that we're supposed to be hungry for information, right? I mean, I can't think of an instance where you would not do that.
Right. And Matt and I were talking before we started recording too, that that's obviously one of your first steps. I mean, you have to understand the issues before you can look into it. But another, I think, important part, which we were talking about earlier, is kind of confusing to me, is like, as investigators, whether you're an SIU investigator or an agent or even with DOJ, your job and your purpose is to be like a finder of facts. So first of all, you can't really do the research and get to the bottom of what the facts are unless you know a little bit about the procedure and the codes and all that type of thing. But essentially, I mean, we're looking to get to the bottom of something. And granted, we're judged or we're critiqued by our return on investment, or in the OI, it's like your stats, you know, how many stats you're going to get this year, how many criminal convictions, how much money you're bringing back, those types of things. But every agent, investigator, attorney, whatever, should have the basic, you know, you're supposed to be doing the right thing. And if you have to go into and add things to, you know, this is still an area that I feel like I have to drill down on more, this extra column that ended up in a spreadsheet. And like, if somebody actually put that there and it made adjustments to push the case forward, when if you stand back and look at it, maybe that should have been an indicator that there's nothing there, or at least not in the direction you're going to. So to go ahead and do something like that to change it, you're no longer looking for the facts. You're no longer a finder of fact. You're one-sided. Your goal is not to get to the bottom of it. Your goal is strictly, at any means necessary, to get the conviction or the recoupment of funds or whatever. And that's really not, it's easy to kind of forget about that, because that's, you know, right, you're expected to do a certain amount of recoveries and convictions, right, but you really have to stick to what the facts are and follow the facts.
It's almost like creating, making the facts fit the narrative versus the narrative fitting the facts. So, but Jason, I want to go to you because, so, you know, part of this has to really do with this intrinsic connection that exists in an SIU, which is really on the, you know, in the fraud, waste, abuse. The SIU's job is to, one of the things would be to, you know, create referrals and work with law enforcement. And, you know, the example I like to give, excuse me, is, you know, when I was a new agent, you and I went out on a case that I was working involving a physical therapist who was under investigation for billing for services not rendered. He had been billing, the allegation was, among other things, that he was billing for physical therapy services for patients who did not appear on the day that they were supposed to be there, and he was submitting claims for that. And collaterally, he was also an ancillary provider of physical therapy services to children at New York City Board of Education schools, where, you know, the school has a Medicaid number and the provider goes in, renders physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. They invoice the school. The school then submits a claim to Medicaid, and that's how this process is. And, you know, we were working at the time, with the SIU of, this is before the UPICs and the program safeguard contractors. This was in the late 90s. It was a carrier, and it was a Medicare carrier that was only in one portion of New York City. And we were still vetting the case and trying to figure it out. And you and I went and we met with two investigators from the carrier. and they were going to do an on-site, but it wasn't really a true on-site. They were going to interview the provider. They weren't there to do an on-site record review, anything like that. It was strictly for the purposes of just doing an interview because they had some fresh complaints and we were still vetting our case. And we were like, okay, go do your thing. And so we meet the investigators after their interview. And we're sitting, I'll never forget this. I was sitting in the front passenger seat of the car. You were driving. It was a rare occasion when you were driving the car. And the two investigators get into the back seat of the car and we're kind of debriefing them. And one of the investigators pulled out of their briefcase or their bag an appointment book from a year or two before, you know, whenever this occurred. And I remember asking, well, what is that? And they said, oh, this was his appointment book. We took it. And I remember having a meltdown myself. I remember you having a colossal meltdown. I was still a very new agent and I thought there was something not right about it. And you were like, I can't believe that this just happened. And, you know, told them like, you can't take it. You've got to go and bring that back. Like, you know, and they did, they brought it back and it was no problem. And then we wound up getting in touch with the assistant U.S. attorney that was, you know, kind of helping us with the case. And we got what was known as a forthwith subpoena, which was something that was very rare. But the reason I bring this up is that this was like a classic example, like looking back, you know, in retrospect, of an instance where SIUs really need to understand kind of where that line of demarcation is, right? And you're working right now on a bunch of process improvements for a particular SIU where we're doing a lot of training and education. So I want to turn it over to you because I think that, you know, you could never stress from a training and education perspective the fact that the SIU investigators are not law enforcement. But some of the things that they do can have real implications on how law enforcement operates, both positive and negative.
Well, first, I did take my Prevagen this morning, so I remember that scenario very well. And actually, it was a very slight woman, and she pulled out one of those old-fashioned ledgers that must have been about 8x14 out of her coat. And so, yeah, it was a pretty delicate situation, to say the least. So, I think that story leads me to want to say that it's always about getting back to the basics. So it's about investigative planning. What is it that you're trying to prove? And overarching over the entire investigation is what you all have already kind of alluded to, which is that we're not there to just prove the allegation. We're there to prove or refute the allegation. Because I am sure that every SIU that I've looked at so far, and I would say that this is universally true across the board, there's a lot more to work than what you can get to. So if you can refute the allegation, refuting it based on facts so that you can rest assured that your decision was well-founded and move on to something else, it would be the better thing for the organization. Now, having said that, investigators, in my humble opinion, as some say, is they're like a dog with a bone. They don't want to let that go. Well, you know, that's why there's a management chain and supervisors can be looking at investigators and see what direction the investigation is headed. And always keeping in mind of, depending on what it is you're trying to prove, are you able to prove intent, or is the proof sufficient so that there can be a civil mitigation to it? Or frankly, is it just an error that you need to look at single damages? And keeping that documented and on track is the key role of that supervisor. But back to, you know, the issue of the investigative facts, and my question is general in nature and not specifically directed at the investigation that started this conversation. I'm not judging it. I'm not supposing. I'm not doing anything other than using it as a way to make a point that I think is really needed, which is this, is that every fact that you find is important. It may be important to prove it, but it may be important to refute it. So the fact that, you know, all those claims were approved on its, if that, and I'm not saying, Matt, you said this, but, you know, on its face, that could be like, well, yeah, why did you do it? But, you know, were all those claims approved after a certain point in time? And was it relative to the investigation becoming overt or at least known to the subject? And then their billing pattern changed. Well, now that fact means something else. And using those facts to assess the future of that investigation and the, you know, the outcome that may come out of it is hugely important.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's an interesting point. And so, Matt, just to go back to you for a minute, like, if, for example, in the prepay, the behavior pattern was consistent to what ultimately was charged, you know, that to me is, I mean, that, you know, facts are strange things, right? And facts, I think the problem that we all collectively have as investigators and that dog with a bone feeling is, well, there's got to be something there. Someone said that there was something wrong, so there must be something wrong. Right. And that's where I think that, you know, oftentimes people are trying to massage a fact to make it fit the narrative versus the narrative is really where, you know, how the facts lie. But, you know, in hearing you talk about that this morning and us just kind of chatting about it, to me, that's an important piece of the puzzle. Like, you've got a payer who thought there was something there. Whatever their fact pattern was that led them to justify putting the provider onto a prepay, and then they get the claims paid, it, you know, it really does water down what the overall premise is if the overall premise of the case fits the narrative of what the prepay was, right? So if we're talking apples to apples, you know, it kind of makes you say, like, what, you know, what's going on here? You know, and I think it's coupled with the fact that if other investigative agencies looked at this issue and found that there was nothing there, that's a fact. Like, for example, you know, if other law enforcement agencies involved in healthcare looked at this from their agency's perspective and found that there was nothing to pursue, those are important facts, right? If OIG or the medic or, you know, CMS, anybody, the UPICs, any of the organizations looked at these issues and identified that there was no malfeasance here resulting in a referral to the OIG, like, you know, that waters down the thrust of what a potential allegation would have behind it.
Absolutely. And, you know, let's take a look at this thing in its context, both in terms of the scheme itself and in the world of the payers, SIUs, and the OIG. You know, this was a known scheme of nationwide proportions, these illicit relationships between drug treatment centers and laboratories, and now using these rural hospitals to be shell corporations so they could maximize the reimbursement. So that's the mindset when they've looked at the data and said, oh, here's a big one. And then to give them the benefit of the doubt, oh, there's this column that says these patients were all outpatients at the hospital, but there's no data to support these patients ever being in the hospital, even better. And so that colored the investigation to when they started talking to the patients, the only questions they asked were you ever in this hospital? No, no, no. Oh, more evidence that this thing is a fraud. It's because it was all colored by the initial environment or milieu in which they were working. Now, my dog's going crazy because of the delivery guy. Now, then you're taking it to the extent of you've got the, you know, the payers and the OIG, and this type of relationship has gone on for decades, right? Where you've got your Fourth Amendment restrictions, you've got the stalking horse, the Trojan horse, all of those things are known. But then you've also got, pay your SIU investigators that want to please. They want to be able to bring them the best case possible. How can we do it? Hey, what do you suggest, OIG agent or FBI agent? You know, we're going to be interviewing this guy. Any suggestions for questions? Anything you guys want us to, you know, they start to skirt that line. And on the other part of it, on the other side of it, you've got, you know, investigators with the government that you go in on site. Boy, I can't get a search warrant to do this. While you're in there, why don't you take a look at this, or let us come and provide you with backup while we're on site. While you're on site, we'll be there. We won't say anything. We won't ask any questions. We'll be observers. So all of those things really get cloudy until, you know, yeah, I'll get you, Jason, until that line gets crossed, and then you've got the whole fruit of the poisonous tree, and nothing gets accepted, everything gets thrown out. But that type of temptation has been there forever.
Right. So Jason, right. So go ahead, Jason. And then I have a follow-up that I'm going to ask you.
Okay. Well, so Matt, you opened up a memory channel that I think raises an important point.
Being prevagent again.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so the audience may be wondering, so why were you there and with that investigator from the Benefit Integrity Unit? And that would be a longer conversation, and I think maybe we'll devote some time to it in another episode, if you will. But the point is that, you know, the investigator was not trained to know what is needed for law enforcement. In this instance, Eric and I were looking to establish the probable cause for a search warrant. And in that instance, to be able to have specific information about the location of the records was key. So, you know, someone being able to go in under their own authority to look at claims and to do what they do and note where the records was a piece of probable cause. Now, the price that was paid for that was hours getting a forthwith subpoena and worrying about was the Benefit Integrity Unit investigator going to be either sued civilly or charged criminally. I mean, so you have to weigh it all out. But the point is, you need to have someone on staff, whether it's directly or as a consultant, that can help with the finer points of investigative policies and procedures.
Yep. So that's really my follow-up is that, you know, having someone who's got this kind of intrinsic law enforcement understanding, and I think there's a, you know, we talked about this a little bit, is that you really have to discern, you know, there are some really great law enforcement people out there who have no prior white collar or healthcare experience. Does that make their background mesh better or worse? I think it's an individual thing, but certainly if you're working in a healthcare fraud, waste, abuse, SIU environment, having someone, you know, like a way to me, you, us, anybody, like, you know, with our background, where if there's an onsite that's going to be going on, it's understanding what are those limitations. And, you know, where my follow-up is, Jay, is, you know, we've heard some stories about instances in which government investigators, agents, badge and gun carrying agents, have accompanied SIU investigators to unannounced on-sites, and maybe even announced on-sites, where they don't tell the organization that law enforcement is coming with them. And, you know, I hear these stories and it makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up, because had the SIU had good consultants in place, they would have said, we're either not doing the on-site or law enforcement organization, we appreciate this, but you're not invited. Because you've got this, right? There's this color of authority. And is, when the SIU investigator shows up, are they there in their capacity as an SIU investigator? Are they there in their capacity as eyes and ears for law enforcement? Are they there in the capacity of quasi-law enforcement? What's law enforcement's job in this, right? So, you know, I want to kind of give you the last word on this, Jay, because I think this still gets back to a training and education. It's a consulting related thing, but you know, when I hear these stories of law enforcement going out on something like an unannounced onsite, it really makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up, because whatever gets gleaned from that onsite, is it fruit of the poisonous tree? Is it tainted?
Well, I think you said it very well, Eric. Bottom line is just that the investigations, especially in the area of a specialty such as healthcare, requires training and expertise that you're only going to get through years of experience. And you know, you can hire criminal justice majors who can do a great job at gathering facts, but having the context, as Matt used that expression before, and I think that's really the point here, is that do they have the ability to put it into the context of what is needed to prove the matter or refute it and manage it in a way that it's going to generate a successful outcome for the organization? That's ultimately what it's about.
Yeah, then that's true. And so, wait, I want to give you, as we're running out of time, we're coming to the last bit of this. If an SIU were to come to you when you're in wearing your agent hat or your ASAC hat, or one of your agents came to you and said, you know, hey, Wade, I just got off the phone with the UPIC investigators. You know, they are going out to do an onsite. What should I tell them to look for, do, or ask? What's your level of comfort in that? And what sort of guidance do you put out there on something like that?
Well, I think it's okay to give them a little bit of coaching on like types of questions to ask and maybe what to look for. But really where the line is if it's inappropriate for, if the agent doesn't have the legal authority to be there or to do certain things, it's just as illegal for the agent to do that as it is for the agent to pass it on and have the SIU investigator do it for them. They're acting as an agent of the government at that point. And that's just, it's not really even a fine line. It's a pretty thick line that I think most experienced agents and certainly prosecutors have a good understanding of that. To your point, maybe less so with either real new people or people who have like maybe a law enforcement background, but don't have the specific healthcare type background, or just kind of SIU, newer SIU investigators that don't have the history. But it really is, it just has to be looked at, like if I as the agent or my agent is not able to do things because they don't have a warrant, they're not able to see things, it's just as illegal and wrong for the non-agent to do that on behalf of the agent.
Right. And you know, and the problem becomes that like an SIU investigator doesn't know any better. Are they ultimately, at the end of the day, is there a situation where they're potentially opening themselves and the company up to liability that wouldn't have been there had it not been for that? I mean, I think the take home for me, I think it's, you know, what I'm gleaning from you guys is, you know, there really has to be this line of demarcation. And I think part of that is understanding law enforcement's goal is oftentimes partially only aligned with an SIU's goal, right? Law enforcement's goal is to ferret out fraud, waste, and abuse, but it's typically from that criminal or civil perspective, whereas an SIU's goal in fraud, waste, abuse, or the payment integrity's goal is recovery of the money, right? And I think that there's certainly a Venn diagram that can be drawn that shows where that alignment exists, but there's still that bifurcation that, you know, law enforcement's goal, and we talk about this in our training, is that the OIG's goal, law enforcement's goal in a criminal case is the execution of a search warrant and the prosecution, the charges through the U.S. Attorney's Office or whomever of a case, providers and entities. Whereas in the commercial space, the goal may not inherently be to make those referrals. Like we see Marshall Allen in his book, like he talks all about the fact that, you know, he takes the position that payers do not have an incentive to make referrals to law enforcement. And so, you know, whether you agree with that or not, there's clearly this Venn diagram. Jason, we're going to wrap up with you.
Okay, just one more thing, as my favorite TV detector would say, but I think it's important and it's relevant. So for the purposes of on-sites, which is part of the scenario that you mentioned earlier, is that the concept of best evidence has to be kept in mind. Many times, an SIU, a benefit integrity unit, whatever, or UPIC, and when they're on site, it's before law enforcement has been there. So there's a great likelihood that the investigators will be seeing things that may be not available later. And so you know, then for future episodes, we have to keep in mind that concept of best evidence, and then what's going to happen, because you're going to have to stand up for that evidence. And I can't count the number of times I've heard from investigators that they're professional investigators, but they haven't been in the law enforcement scenario. And when you talk about having to stand up for that evidence, meaning testify to it, it's like, oh no, I don't do that. Well, it really has to be thought of at those early stages and not like as an afterthought later.
Right. No, it's a great point. And we're trying to drive that home when we do our SIU training and education. We talk about best evidence. We talk about, you know, the documentation piece of that puzzle. So, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, this case is obviously still in its early stages. I think it was only filed in the beginning of the summer or the late spring. So there's a lot of moving parts to this. I think a lot more is going to come out as we go. It's super interesting to me. I'm following it on a regular basis because it's fascinating, as I think a lot of the people that are watching this podcast are. So, as always, guys, there's always a lot more to cover than we have time. So I appreciate Matt, Wade, I appreciate you getting the memo on no collar shirt. Jason has been busy on another client deliverable, so he missed that. He missed that memo, but you know, we're going to work to align that going forward. So, as always, it's great seeing you guys. It's always great interacting. We could talk about some of this stuff for hours. So again, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the OIG Roundtable. If you are not getting our newsletter, please send us an email at hello@adviseadvizehealth.com. We've got our next LinkedIn Live coming up in October. We'll be announcing that. For those of you that are going to be at the NHCA conference in November, please come and see us. We'll be manning a booth at the vendor spot. And I will also be presenting on some SIU-related matters with one of the leaders in the SIU space here in the country. When that gets published, we'll be announcing that, but we'll be at the NHCA to see you all there. Again, thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable.
Thank you.
Thank you.